Let's go now. A little life out here.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the UK Packers podcast. As usual, I'm your host. That's DDNFL on Twitter. And of course, follow the group at UK Packers. And we've the two man legends again on the podcast. We promised it to you. The draft coverage is going to be stellar. Peter Jones wrote his 310-page draft guide, Packer-centric. Incredible stuff. Peter's on the line at the IT Hedgehog. And of course, our draft guru as well, Andy Davies, Pooley Shrew, who... The two of you lads have some sort of a sixth sense for certain positions. Andy, when it comes to running backs, you just seem to know all about them. And we have the only two living human beings on this podcast who evaluated Jordan Love and said that the Packers had a good pick in him, that they were going to pick him well before he actually picked him. So there's no revisionist history here. But anyway, kick it over to you, Peter. What's going on, buddy?
I'm doing good, Stephen. It's good to be here. Good to talk some defense. And we're going to take a safety first approach.
A safety first, safely. I do want to talk about Kool-Aid as well at some point. Now, I know he's a cornerback, but Andy Davies, ever thought about calling your kid, Sunny Delight? Or
yeah, well, my poncho for calling my kids after Packers players, let's just hope Kool-Aid doesn't come to the... to fruition. Yeah, it's not going to happen, is it?
No, Jesus.
More likely a bottle of Gatorade than Kool-Aid for me, thank you.
Yeah, God. But that's the thing. Your kids are named after Packer greats. So how annoying would it be if the Kool-Aid was there and he was amazing and then you had to raise your kid as Kool-Aid? You know what I mean? Like, haha, Clinton Dix was bad enough, but really to have... We're going to talk about defense. If anyone hasn't read Peter Jones's draft guide, it's on the website and it's free, and it's been free for all time. It's the sixth iteration, Pete. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah.
It gets better every year. That's not my opinion. That's everyone's opinion. For instance, we got an email from Matt Van Lanen before the show, and he said that he absolutely loves the draft guide. He loves the podcast with you lads as well. So, you know, there's an awful lot of people out there getting kicks out of it. But I think we give the people what they want, Pete. And I think usually we sort of start by your draft guide table of contents. We run down through all the positions. We did offense last week. We're doing defense this week. If we were to go by that order, we would be starting with interior defensive linemen. But let's just show a little bit of flesh, a little bit of skin for the people, right? Safety. We need safety because of the new scheme that we're in and all this sort of sexy stuff, right? Not only that, I see the number one safety, Cooper DeJean, on your draft guide in green, which means that he is definitely a fit for the Packers, someone we could go for. So can you walk us through that, Pete? I mean,
yeah.
I guess first off, is safety, do you think that's where the Packers are going? As you said, safety first. And do you think Cooper DeJean is in play, or has he got too much press now and he's going to go higher than we have a pick for?
So, I mean, exactly right on the safety first approach. That's it's obviously a position of need for the Packers, but there aren't a lot of superstars at the top of this draft at this position.
Yeah.
So I think if you can't get Cooper DeJean, and we'll go into that in a moment, then it's not that you'd look for somebody else at that position at 25. Then you're definitely looking at another position or trade down, because there isn't another safety of that value in this draft. Yeah, I've been on the kind of Cooper DeJean bandwagon for quite some time now, and whilst he played predominantly corner at Iowa, he played a little bit of safety and a little bit of slot corner, and as I said, the majority of the time as a boundary outside corner. But he seemed, when you watch him play, right, so he's pretty physical. In fact, he's very physical, and he's one of those guys that plays well facing the quarterback.
Yeah.
So rather than running with his back to the football, he's one of those guys that's great at anticipating passes and diagnosing plays that are happening in front of him, and that's why he appears to be more of a safety fit than a corner fit for me, at least.
Yeah.
Now there will be teams, I'm sure, that will try him at corner if they're the teams that draft him. But for me, I think he seems more suited to safety. And he's one of those guys that when I did the draft guide, I went back and forth as to which group to put him in.
Yeah.
Right. Because so he played at cornerback, and ultimately I decided I should put him in the group where I think he ought to play, and that's safety. Super athletic guy, very very athletic guy, was injured in 2023, had a broken leg. I think it was in November, so missed the end of the season, and therefore missed the All-Star games and the combine. Although he was at the combine for measurements and medicals and all of that kind of thing. Just completed his workout, I guess probably a couple of weeks ago now, his own pro day to show off that he was healthy. Ran a 4.45 40, I think, and that's his first, basically his first, you know, athletic drill since coming back from the injury. Super athletic guy, right? So speed, can cut on a dime, anticipates, like I say, great at diagnosing plays in front of him, closes on the football, has great hands. So 7 interceptions over the last season and a half. Just a really, really good athlete. Physical, returns punts. It's very difficult to find, you know, too much wrong with him, other than your question is he hasn't played that much safety, therefore it's a little bit of a learning curve for him.
Yeah.
But yeah, I obviously I'm waxing lyrical about him because it's just one of those guys that I really like.
Can I ask you a question, Pete? Just on the physicality side of things, right? Now, the minute I say this out loud, you and Andy will throw your heads back and laugh, right? But anytime I hear physicalness, and that's what I heard about Josh Jones, right? Now, again, we drafted him in the second round way back when, was it 2017 or something? But he was meant to be this, like, sort of superstar guy, and we got him, and he just couldn't take his hands off players, and he kept getting penalised for it. He never learned. What do you mean by aggressive and physical with Cooper DeJean? Is it that? Could he get penalised in the NFL level for that? Is there a learning curve there or no?
Yeah, I think there is with a lot of these guys, right? So I think that's a fair question, but I think it's more of a general question to a lot of the guys. Excuse me, in college. But I mean, if you look at him playing the run, Steve, you know, he'll get up and play the run, whereas you get some defensive back safeties and corners that their run support isn't great. You know, they might be good in coverage, but they're nowhere to be found in run support, or they can't work their way through traffic to make the tackle.
Yeah.
Right. And Cooper DeJean is not that guy. Right. So yes, you have to be careful of being a little bit handsy and all that stuff. But I think that applies to quite a few corners and safeties generally coming out of college. But I think the overall physicalness, the aggressiveness, the I want to get up and make plays. I want to go up and hit the ball carrier. I want to get involved in the run game. All right. That's all there with Cooper DeJean.
And Andy, can I pose a question to you then about Cooper DeJean? I guess first off, because look, and we're going to wax lyrical a lot about safety, right? Because that's something that is seen as a massive need for the Packers. If we shore it up there, well, then we could have a superstar defense. When it comes to safety, Andy, Cooper DeJean, is he worth for you, if he's still on the board at a certain point, to package some draft picks and trade up to get him? Or do you think that the Packers have more pressing needs on defense or offense to go, look, if it's too much of a reach, no? For all of the reasons that Peter mentioned, right? He broke his leg, has that injury, played cornerback, and he's kind of not an unknown entity at safety, but certainly there'll be a bit of a learning curve there. Where do you sit on that, Andy?
Just to join the dots, I suppose, I agree with everything Peter said in terms of his skill set. I think the closer to the line of scrimmage he plays, the better he is. And I would say the same in defence of Josh Jones. I think he was, for me, a downhill safety. And the best game he had in a Packer uniform was against Cincinnati, when he was able to fly around and do his thing in the box. The minute you put him in space, because he had slightly stiff hips, he was caught on the flag department. But that for me was a misuse of a talent. So it's put about square peg in a round hole.
Yeah.
I agree with Peter. I think in terms of a downhill safety, which is what we're looking for in essence, given who we've recruited in the offseason, I think he's a good fit. Now, would I trade up from 25 to go and get him, which we may have to do? No, is the answer. I think there's, if we're going to trade up, then it would be for a premium position. And that's just my opinion. And that's not a slight on the guy, because I think he's been a, you know, a draft favourite for most Packer fans. They see him and, you know, there's obviously a lot there to like, isn't there? So, but I wouldn't trade up. I think the last one we did was Darnell Savage. And that was one that surprised me at the time. Not because I didn't like the player, but because I think we could have stood pat and got him where we were. But yeah, I think there's every chance he becomes a Packer. But for me, it would be at 25, not sort of trading up and giving up draft capital to go and get him.
Yeah, and according to your draft guy, Peter, and you did allude to it in your earlier answer, it was just that, you know, it's kind of feast or famine stuff. We've seen Cooper DeJean going round one in your draft guide. He's number 23 on your big board. After that, there seems to be a very steep drop-off in safety. So if we don't get Cooper DeJean, so it is your opinion then that we kind of wait till later rounds. Is that a fair summarization, Pete? Is that, you know, the talent outside of him and maybe Tyler Newbin, it drops off then and we could pick someone up in the, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh rounds?
I think that's right. I mean, you know, I think past Cooper DeJean, the guys after that, when you get to the Tyler Newbins, the Cam Kinchins, the Javon Bullards, Bullard's an interesting one. Now I've mentioned his name. Bullard's an interesting one because he may be a fit as a slot corner as much as he is a safety.
Yeah.
So the guy he reminds me a little bit of is Brian Branch, the guy that Detroit drafted last year. But yeah, I think the general point is that once you get beyond DeJean, there's kind of a whole group of guys, right? And people are going to see these guys differently. So Tyler Newbin, for example, played predominantly as a deep safety. We don't need that guy. We've just picked up Xavier McKinney. And, you know, Newbin is an athletic guy, but doesn't have great, you know, outstanding speed.
Yeah.
So that's probably not the guy. You're looking for that guy to play closer to the line of scrimmage. And I'll pick out a name, and maybe Andy wants to talk about him, because I know this is a guy that Andy really likes, and that's Cole Bishop out of Utah.
Hmm.
Very athletic guy, plays close to the line of scrimmage. But I don't want to steal Andy's thunder, because that's really one of Andy's guys.
He's the only guy that is the answer to that one. Yeah, he's the only guy for me, yeah. Out of this entire crop, he would be the... Just in terms of what we're looking for, and like you say, with McKinney, I think we've got the back end covered. It needs to be somebody who's going to shoot the gaps, play the run game where I'll play the box, be that extra man in the box. And for me, the two, Cole Bishop is the best fit for that role. He's 21. He fits all the sort of athletic thresholds that the Packers are looking for. He's an intelligent football player. He's hard-nosed. I think he's got future Packer written all over him. He'll be my number one choice. And I think you'd probably get him the beginning of round three, back end of round two. So you're getting good value as well. I think Jaden Hicks, a guy from Washington State, would be the kind of third option, if you like. But yeah, that he would be, Cole Bishop for me stands out massively.
Yeah, and you were saying that, Andy. Look, that's second and third round. So Cole Bishop and Jaden Hicks are on the draft guide at 6 and 7, tip to go in the third, or as you say, late second round. Is there value in it outside of those two guys? I know you sort of said, look, Cole Bishop was kind of it. But is there anybody else that people should look out for in the later rounds?
Yeah, possibly. I think they'll look for depth because we don't have a lot. You know, Anthony Johnson showed some glimpses last year, didn't he, that he could be a real help going forward. But I think they might sort of add to the room and try and make it competitive.
Mm.
For me, there's probably a few names. I think the guy from Wake Forest, Malik Mustafa, I think he tested really well on his pro day. So I think the name to watch out for sort of further down. I think Peter was right about Newbin. His skill set was sort of back end, and I know he didn't test particularly well because of he was carrying some injuries, but he doesn't really fit what we're looking for. So, that would be... and a guy from Air Force, now I think it's different these days, Peter, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think they have to see out their full quota. So often that was a problem, wasn't it? Yep. But the guy, Trey Taylor, he's got quite an interesting skill set to me, and one to look out for right down the very bottom of the draft there.
So, Pete, if we round out then the safety class, because I know it's sort of people are looking at Cooper DeJean and saying, like, he's the guy I want. I guess the same question to you is that if he was there and you had to trade a couple of spots, would you go for it? And if Cooper DeJean isn't there and you are Brian Gutekunst and you're looking at the safety position and you're looking at how the draft might fall, when do you go and try dip into the safety market if you cannot get Cooper DeJean?
Yeah, great question. So I would consider trading a couple of spots up for Cooper DeJean, but I wouldn't consider, you know, going 5 or 6 or 7 or 10 spots to get him. Because as Andy says, you know, that's kind of, you're wanting to get one of those, as Andy said, a premium position, a corner or an edge or an offensive tackle, if that's the way you want to go. And I think that, I think there's going to be other guys at 25, not at safety, but at other positions like offensive tackle, where there is value.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I might consider, you know, 1 or 2 spots, but I wouldn't consider any more than that to go up and get Cooper DeJean. But I think if they don't end up with him there and say they go, I don't know, say they go tackle early and whatever else, then I think that safety is in play probably around round 3.
Mm.
You know, and Andy's, you know, gone over the kind of two names that would kind of jump out, Cole Bishop and Jaden Hicks in that kind of area. And Andy again has picked out the other names later. Trey Taylor of Air Force is a really interesting one. So I think that, you know, all in all, this is just one of those safety groups that doesn't have a great player at the top. You know, sometimes you see one safety who's kind of in the top 5 or top 10. We don't have that in this draft. And it's kind of, I guess, to be fair, it's probably a normal safety class beyond that.
Yeah.
You know, this is probably a lot of what we see most years at that position. And I think the thing to remember, or one of the things to remember, is that sometimes, quite often, perhaps not very often, but it happens quite a lot, is that the guys drafted as corners will end up moving inside.
Hmm.
To safety, whether that's immediately or as their career progresses, like a Charles Woodson did later in his career, Ronnie Lott did. So I think there's a lot more ability, a lot more versatility typically with corners to be able to move them inside to safety. So I think teams are more liable to go deeper on corners who may give them that inside versatility.
It's a great point. And I mean, I guess, Andy, we should nearly focus on cornerbacks now, right? And I cannot get out of my head, anytime we talk about cornerbacks or safeties, and, you know, when they're kind of borderline and they're thinking about switching them around, the Packers have famously made balls of an awful lot of those sort of positions, right? But you can address that if you want, right? But let's look at cornerback. According to Pete's draft guide now, there's a good, it seems fairly deep between round 1, 2 and 3. So where do you think the Packers sit at cornerback? Do you think they see this as a premium position, that if a guy's sitting there, you know, he's kind of fell down because the boards fell weird, do we go cornerback round 1? And can you give us sort of an Andy Davies, Pooley Shrew hit list on who you're looking out for a cornerback?
I think the first player I reviewed back in sort of January time was Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo. I think I asked you, Pete, didn't I, at the time, I said, what did you think of Mitchell?
Yeah.
At the time, he was kind of the back end of round 1, wasn't he? I think he was borderline round 2, to be quite frank. And then as this draft process rolls along, he's suddenly, you know, top 15, because people have got to realise what kind of athlete he is and the potential he has. Now, because he comes from a smaller school in Toledo, I think those talents were kind of hidden a little bit, weren't they? But yeah, for me, he's a real deal. He's got everything. So if we're going to jump up, and you talked about jumping up to a position, 15 or 16, then Mitchell will be my number one guy.
Mm.
I also think the Packers will really like Terrion Arnold from Alabama. So it's a bit of a coin toss. I guess they've got different skill sets and slightly different players with edges in each direction. But those two for me stand out. Take your pick, 1A and 1B. I like Mitchell, but I would be absolutely elated with Arnold. Now, to get either of those players, you're going to have to go and get into the reaches of sort of at least 15, 16, I think. I believe that the Seahawks would be a perfect trading partner at 16, but a lot depend on what the Colts do at 15. in which direction they go. So that's how I see it playing out. And those are the two guys that I will be reaching up for. In terms of, like, you know, if we're going to spend money and capital to get up to that point, then that's where I'll be spending it.
Yeah. What about that, Pete? I mean, would you see the Packers spending some draft capital to get up a cornerback? Are the cornerbacks, in your mind, as deep as what the draft guide looks like? It looks like there's an awful lot of talent on the board.
Yeah, so I think again, what you don't have is a guy right at the very top of the draft. So we often see a corner, you know, going to pick four or pick six, that kind of area. There isn't that guy in this draft. But, yeah, I mean, I totally agree with Andy. I don't think the Packers would do it, but if they were to trade up, then it would be, for me, it would be for Quinion Mitchell. Now, neither Quinion Mitchell or Terrion Arnold were on my kind of Packers watch list, simply because I thought they would be well gone by the time the Packers pick at 25.
Yeah.
Right. If the Packers were picking at 17, though, both of those guys would probably have been on that watch list. So, yeah, I mean, I like both of those guys. I mean, Mitchell's a real, real athlete. You know, this is a guy that ran 4.33 in the 40. But he's also physical and has got some, you know, a bit of attitude which you like at the cornerback position.
Mm.
And you know, Arnold comes from that program at Alabama where, I seem to find myself saying this quite a lot. You don't get to play and start for a number of years at Georgia and Alabama unless you're really good.
Yeah.
Right. So Arnold is good. He's also played a little bit of safety. Now, he's not a guy that you would look at moving to safety because he's too good a corner to do that, certainly, you know, the first few years of his career. But that little bit of versatility always helps. And maybe I should follow up my previous answer where I mentioned about Charles Woodson and Ronnie Lott. I'm not by any way suggesting that there are, you know, you can convert any corner into a safety and they become at that level of player. Those were already two great players before they moved to safety. Those were just examples of where that's happened.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think because corner is one of those positions where you almost can't have enough of those guys, right? Because, you know, in today's NFL, you're probably starting three at least, right? With the slot corner. You get the odd injury here and there. So you're looking at a depth chart of six or seven guys at corner these days.
Hmm.
You just can't have enough of those guys. And the Packers have done pretty well, you know, with the Carrington Valentines and those guys who played well last season. But, you know, there are question marks. You know, Eric Stokes, really good rookie season, but has been injured, you know, on and off for a couple of years. Keyshawn Nixon played slot and probably played better at slot last year than we may have expected in a kind of first year planet slot. But you're always looking to add guys into that mix. So yeah, long answer to short question, Steve. But I would certainly consider it for considering trading up for Mitchell and possibly Arnold.
And I guess, look, Andy, I'll kick this to you, right? Because, and look, we spent a lot of time on safeties and cornerbacks, but as you say, it's of massive interest to Packer fans out there because we're being sort of fed these names. Kool-Aid, McKinstry, for one, Cooper DeGene. But outside cornerbacks and safety, Andy, what's next on your hit list between interior defensive linemen, edge rushers and linebackers for you? What do you think is on top of Goody's desk right now in the sort of top of the pile and he's going to look at and is more important for the team? And what sort of names would you throw out there and rounds to give people a bit of a taster?
I think just to sort of linger on Peter's point a little bit before we move on to the other position groups, I think cornerback will be something they address in the later rounds as well. So we've talked about some of the bigger name guys, but I think brotherly love in Max Melton might be an option if we're thinking about rounds two and three. And I also think the Jones brothers further down, because Peter's on, obviously. So the guy from Boston, Elijah, and then the guy from Florida State, Jarian Jones. Yep. So just two names to watch out for there that are further down the draft boards. But I do think whether it's safety or cornerback looking to play a little bit safe, vice versa, I think there'll be a lot of numbers added to those two rooms over the course of the 3 days. And it might not be all about the top sort of tier athletes, if you like. So a lot will depend. I think going sort of looking at the position groups, we're pretty deep on D-line, aren't we? But the Packers will never turn down an opportunity if there's one there, will they? So whether it's an interior defensive line, and we're moving to the four, it's not the four as we know it in terms of 4-3, is it, Peter? It's not your Reggie White and Sean Jones bookends 4-3, is it? It's going to be slightly different. So I think that will figure into the mix as well, Steve, to be honest.
Yeah, and look, I guess, you know what, since we've talked about cornerbacks and safeties, an awful lot of these guys, and you sort of mentioned it, that you want the guy who's close to the line of scrimmage to kind of act as this hybrid linebacker role. And that's arguably something that we need to sort of pivot on as well, Peter, isn't it? So linebacker in this draft, I guess, what is the appetite, do you think, for the Packers to get someone in at linebacker? Because looking just purely at the numbers, and again, deferring completely to you, in your draft guide, Pete, there's one guy who is up around round one and two, and then there seems to be a steep enough drop off. Is there just not the talent there this year at linebacker?
I think this is a group where, but there's three or four guys that could go in round two, and you know, a couple more in round three. And it, minus the fact that there isn't a round one guy, again, this looks almost like a typical linebacker group that we've seen for the last few years. There's one guy that I absolutely love. People that have listened to me, whatever, will know that it's Peyton Wilson out of North Carolina State. But his college career was dogged by injury. Had a number of, you know, injuries, and is probably, I mean, he's a really good athlete, right? Let's make no bones about it. Despite the injuries, he ran a 4.43 in the 40. Was really good at the combine in terms of the drills that he did. He's a really good athlete. But he's probably better against the pass.
Yeah.
Both dropping into coverage and blitzing than he is as an out-and-out run stuffer. And if the Packers are looking for that out-and-out run stuffer, I'm not sure that there is one in this draft. Junior Colson out of Michigan is probably the closest to that. But he's not one of my favorite players. I prefer Peyton Wilson. I prefer Edgerrin Cooper.
Yeah. Does anyone sort of pique your interest, Andy, in this, where you look at it and go, you know, they don't know him because he's from a smaller school, or they don't know him because he hasn't got a lot of experience in doing it? But you guys always talk about the attributes, right? Is there a linebacker in here that you go, because you are, you know, Andy Diamond in the Rough Davies, right? You can look at these guys and go, no one's talking about him. And it does not annoy you every year, Andy, that you sort of, you'd give us a list of guys and, you know, I'd be looking at them anyway. Peter obviously knows them inside out, but I'd be looking at them going, who? And then you see them start to bubble up as the sort of the hype starts coming on. So linebacker then, is there anybody in this sort of group that you look at and go, do you know what? Keep your eye on him. He might be good.
There is a couple, but I think we've been doing this for a long time now. And every year we talk about linebackers and you watch teams like San Francisco or who have game-changing linebackers. And then you look at our room, particularly as it stands today, and no disrespect to the guys in the room, but the cupboard's kind of bare, isn't it, outside of Key Walker? And we're kind of, not a lot of depth there, is there? And there's a lot of unproven talent in that room. So I think we do need help in that room. I'd like to see us be able to play a linebacker that can be effective in coverage. And Peter's man is that guy, isn't he? So I think in terms of the best coverage linebacker in this draft, it's Peyton Wilson. You know, he's an athlete. He's got all the skills that you need. So if that's the direction the Packers are considering, I'd be over the moon to get him. I think he's, again, the top two stand head and shoulders above for me. So Edge Cooper and Peter's guy, Peyton Wilson, are easily the best two linebackers. Trevin Wallace is probably my number three, but again, he's a different kind of player for me. I think he's effective blitzing in the A-gap. I think he's effective, sort of a bit of a heat-seeking missile going to the ball, but he's not proven in coverage, is he, Peter? I don't think there's a lot on tape of him doing that kind of stuff. So again, it's the unknown. There's not a lot of rough diamonds, Pete, I don't think, Steve, to be quite frank. A guy I like right at the very bottom out of Texas El Paso was Tyrese Knight, but more for his special teams kind of prowess or potential more. So again, I think it's a room that they'll add for depth. But he was my one name to watch out for there, Tyrese Knight. He's a little bit smaller than you'd ideally like to see. But yeah, definitely one to watch out for.
Pete, any diamonds in the rough?
No, I quite like Andy's mentioned Trevor Wallace. I quite like Trevor Wallace. That's, you know, fourth, fifth round kind of area. You just get the feeling, or I certainly have the feeling, that if the Packers are going to get a significant player at linebacker, then they've got to get them, you know, in round two, maybe round three. But beyond that, you might find that diamond in the rough. You might find the guy that can play special teams, which is great. But if you want that every down linebacker who's going to help your defense immediately, it's got to be round two or round three for me.
Yeah, outside of Wilson and Cooper, I can see a later summer arrival coming in off the streets, or, you know, in terms of a trade or whatever it looks like. I just don't think, if we don't get the solution in round two, it's not going to be there.
It's mad the way it's turning out. Again, talking to two draft nicks, you could probably see the structure in the way the board's going to fall. But for me, what it sounds like is, if Cooper DeJean's not there and you don't sort of feel that, you know, he's not close enough that you can trade up a little bit to get him, well, then drop the safety project until a little bit later in the rounds. And linebacker seems to be the same, right? If you don't get that guy in round two, well, then leave it and let it drop down. So it's kind of interesting that if those guys are gone, it sort of let your board fall the way it will then after that point. And which brings us to our D-line, both interior defensive linemen and edge rushers. And Andy, how is this set up now with Jeff Hafley? I mean, in your head anyway, you've already kind of alluded to it, you know, between the 4-3 and it's not going to be the bookend stuff. But how does that inform then how the Packers go and draft in this draft? Do you have any idea or any sort of finger on the pulse there?
Real answer is no. Just listening to him talk, I think you could never have enough good pass rushers. And the fact that Enagbare is going to be out potentially for the majority of the season, it does leave a little bit of a lack of depth for me. So I think there's, if the right player falls to us, I think they'll sort of take a shot there. And the same guy, I suppose the contract situation with Kenny Clark and upcoming contracts with TJ Slayton and all that sort of stuff, and the development of some of the defensive line that we took last year, the likes of Brooks, will be key. So on paper, I think we're pretty set, but I would be surprised if we didn't particularly add to our pass rush arsenal. I think that's where the focus would be.
Yeah, because Peter, I'm looking at your draft guide again. The place I go when I look into all this draft stuff, because it's ridiculous. And I'm looking at the edge rushers. And the first one that I see in green that's sort of a fit for the Packers where they might go is Marshawn Nyland. But that's around 2-3. Can you sort of bunch together for us the interior D-line and edge rushers as to which you think that the Packers are probably keying on more? What kind of rounds are we looking at then?
Yeah, it's a difficult one, because when you look at the Packers roster across the defensive line, the edge guys, you could make a case for saying that they're completely set at those spots. You know, you look inside and you've got Clark and you've got Slayton, you've got Devontae Wyatt, you've got Carl Brooks, so, you know, and Colby Wooden, and then you've got, you know, the edge guys, so I don't need to list all those. So there's absolutely a case for saying they look pretty set at that. But when you go beyond that, as Andy mentioned, like Preston Smith, you know, his contract's being redone, isn't it? It seems to be every year.
Yeah.
So there's a point where that's not going to happen. There's Preston Smith's been a really good Packer, by the way, so it's not about that. It's eventually these things happen. And as Andy mentioned, you know, Enagbare is injured. I have a sneaking suspicion that they do go edge relatively early, and I don't really know what that means. They picked an edge, you know, in Lucas Van Ness last year that whilst he was 13th on our board and the Packers picked 13, I didn't expect it to be honest. So on that basis, you know, Goody surprises us. He loves those edge guys. The only thing I would say about those edge guys is size.
Yeah.
Right. So pretty much everybody that the Packers have on the edge is a 6'5", 6'6", 270 plus pound guy. You know, Rashan Gary, Lucas Van Ness, Preston Smith, etc. So it would surprise me if he went for one of the smaller edge guys. I think they will take an edge. I like Marshall Nyland in the second round. He's a tough ball rusher from the outside who is, I think one of the things that they will like about him is he has a non-stop work ethic in that he plays hard on every down and never stops, right? He's a to the whistle type guy, and they like those kind of guys. I was asked the other day, right, if there was a complete surprise pick in the first round at pick 25 for the Packers, who would it be? To be a complete surprise, it would be the edge rusher out of UCLA, Liatu Latu.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think he drops that far. Right. I think he's gone in the teens. But he's a very, very productive pass rusher from the outside, and had a neck injury during his college career. And I guess something like that, depending on how the board falls and how teams look at that medical situation, there is an outside chance that he drops a bit.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be my first choice of position, but again, you're in this kind of thing. Well, if that guy's there when you're picking at 25, he's really great value. You might think about it, but I think it's edge, you know, down the board, defensive line. Yeah, the interior's set, right? So I think a guy in the really late rounds like Christian Boyd out of Northern Iowa, very experienced guy, tough guy in the middle of the line. I can see that in kind of round six or seven. He seems like a kind of Packer type,
yeah,
you know, defensive tackle. I can see that happening. So I can see defensive line late.
Andy, any names to throw at us who you sort of fancy on the edge or D-line? And as you said, I mean, we're talking surprise pick territory there. It's a really interesting thought experiment piece. Is there any of these guys that you go, look, he has the potential to drop and we don't need it, but he's just too good to pass up?
No. Edge-wise, I studied them quite a lot. I just wanted to fall in love with one of them because I think, like you say, the left field pick from Goody, you know, edge would not surprise me, but they're just, I'm not enamored with any of them, from Dallas Turner to Chop Robinson to, Jared Verse, that's not for me. So I wouldn't be interested in any. And I hope they go early because it means that we'll be better positioned for the players that we do really like. I agree with Peter. I think Marshawn Nealon, the guy from Western Michigan, would be someone we maybe get late second, early third. I think he would be a good option. All-out motor, good athlete, slightly under the 6'4", so you do wonder about that, but I think he would be a good fit for us. I really do. And in terms of later round edge people, I had two names to look out for. One I've watched loads of, I don't know why, because texts were kind of random, but the guy Miles Cole, he's just a big, lurchy 6'6" kind of nuisance is the best way I could describe it. I could see him being a nuisance on special teams, field goal blocks, that kind of stuff. So he's very raw, but certainly one to look out for. And then guys that maybe it's Peter knows, because Houston Christian's one of your neck of the woods, isn't it? And Jelix Hunt. Yeah, absolutely. So again, you know, good 22-year-old, liked what he did. And in terms of where you're going to be able to pick him up, sort of back end of 6-7, yeah, absolutely worth the investment in terms of edge people.
I was actually going to jump in at the end of this. I mentioned Jelix Hunt. Absolutely spot on. So Houston Christian, never had a guy drafted who finished his career at Houston Christian that used to be Houston Baptist, where Colin Montgomery went to college.
Oh, my days. There you go. Oh, fun fact. Colin fun facts of Pete.
Yeah, and yeah, Hunt is that he's kind of all-round guy, can rush the passer, can drop back in coverage, plays a lot of special teams. And it's just kind of one of those guys in the fourth, fifth round that just, yeah, can just do a great job and will get better.
Mm.
So, yeah, he actually is a really interesting name, I think, to keep an eye on. I think we had him on kind of our secondary watch list. I like Jelix Hunt a lot.
There's a lot of names on the interior defensive line, Steve, that I really like, but I just don't think that, as Peter described, the needs is the top of the priority list, which is unfortunate because I really like Chris Jenkins. I think he's got unlimited tap potential. I think he could be a really better pro than he was a college player. I think he could be really good. I like the guy Michael Hall from Ohio State. Yeah. I think he's going to be a good player. So there's just two names. I really like Darius Robinson. I don't think there's any way we pick him because of he's a kind of in-betweener in terms of his size and his positions. But, yeah, some real real good players, I think, will come out of the defensive line crop.
Sorry, can I just jump in with a couple of things to add to that? So I don't look at mock drafts and stuff until, until we've kind of finished this, you know, the process of writing the guide and all of that stuff to keep my mind as uncluttered as I possibly can. It's already very cluttered. What I have seen is a number of people mocking Johnny Newton to the Packers at pick 25, the defensive tackle out of Illinois. And he's actually 25th on our board. So I think he's a good player.
Yeah.
I just don't, the value for the Packers and what they need, that just doesn't seem like the right pick to me.
Hmm. Would he even play? Would he even get on the field?
Well, there you go. And I just wanted to throw that one out there because I have seen, you know, mocks, and I think I've even seen, I don't know which organization it was, somebody mock, you know, from one of the analysts mocking Johnny Newton to the Packers. I just, if it happens, I'll hold my hands up and say I was wrong. I wouldn't get that pick. I just wouldn't get it. And it's not that he's not value for a team there. That's why he's 25 on our board. I just wouldn't get it for the Packers.
Yeah, I just don't see that happening.
Because that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, you know, when we draft someone, you're like, Jesus, we're massively set at that position. What are you doing? But again, I like the idea of the all-out motor because we all know the guy who wins X every year is Rashan Gary. I mean, the guy's motor is second to none, never stops. But come here, we know that, well, from what you're telling me, defense is obviously a massive focal point for the Packers, which is weird because we're in the sort of transition-y stage. We're moving to all these stud wide receivers. We've got our brand new QB in there, slinging it. So defense is front and center of mind. So we've probably already mentioned them, right? But when you look down the defense as kind of a whole, if you look at the draft as a whole, what are you licking your chops at, Andy? I mean, what type of positions do you want us to go high on? Is there any sort of players that you go, look, if all else fails and it gets out of hand and we see players like Josiah DeGuara on the bloody board, right? The one player, if he is there on defense, I'd be absolutely chuffed about and go, all right, you know, like we'll start there, give them an A for that and then sort of scratch our heads at the rest. How do you see it?
For jigsaw pieces, I would want Cole Bishop and either the two linebackers we talked about at the top of the piece there. So in terms of fitting the jigsaw, that's it. So that totally contradicts the best player available. This is about need, and they would be my two positions of need. In terms of best player available, for me, it'll either be a cornerback or it'll be offensive lineman. So if we have got the temptation to trade up, it'll be for either of those two cornerbacks, Arnold or Mitchell, preferably Mitchell, or it'll be an offensive lineman that we talked about on the previous pod. That's for me. Whichever way it pans out, every time we look at it at 25, unless DeJuan's there, I just don't see what's there for the Packers at 25.
It's a weird place.
So hopefully the draft, it's a really weird place. Yeah. And I just think that if you look at the way the teams in our division in particular are building, there's going to be some tasty wide receiver crews, isn't there? And to compete and to get out of the division in the first instance, you know, our cornerback room is going to need to be strong. Now, we don't know how Stokes is going to come back. We got kind of different versions of 23 last year, didn't we? And whilst, you know, Valentine, all that kind of did okay, I think we need to just make sure we're really strong in that room to make sure we can lock down the North first and foremost.
Yeah. It's a weird place, Peter, isn't it? 25. I mean, it seems increasingly like when you look at the value, you're like, Jesus, we're either trading up or trading down, whether we stay pat at 25. So I'd love you to incorporate that into your answer. But kind of the same question to you, Pete, if you see this as defensive minded and if it all goes a bit south or a bit manky, I mean, who are you looking at on the defensive side of the ball to say, look, there's a couple of names, watch out for them. If we get them, we might be okay.
Well, I mean, I think I've already mentioned that. I mean, for me, it has to be Cooper DeJean at the very top, right? And I think that if he's not there, then conversely, it's Graham Barton on the offensive line that we talked about last week. But I guess beyond that, right, it's the position thing. I'd like to see a linebacker in round two or round three, because I think that's a position of real need. You know, we've both talked lovingly about Peyton Wilson, but if it's Edgerrin Cooper, or maybe if it's one of those two guys, then I'd be happy. And if they don't, I mean, Andy's done it. If they don't get Cooper DeJean early, then I think you would like to see them come back for the safety, whether that's Cole Bishop or Jaden Hicks in about round three, because they fit that need of that box safety that the Packers need. There's something else that I want to throw out there, though, about these picks. And you're right, 25 is a really strange place. Next year's draft, right, looks like it's going to be really deep. Mm. Because the college eligibility, or the extra year that the players who were in college in 2020 were given in terms of their eligibility, starts to run out next year. Mm. And so there'll be more guys in the draft next year than there are this year, which just by definition probably means next year's draft is deeper. And so I think one thing to consider, and who knows what the Packers' thoughts are on this, but one thing I think we should consider, I wouldn't be surprised to see the Packers trade some picks in this draft for 2025 picks.
That's interesting.
You typically get a round higher. So if you traded a fourth rounder this year, you'd probably get a third rounder next year, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or even if you gave up a second rounder this year, you might well get a first rounder for that second rounder. You know, this year's second becomes a 2025 first. So I think it gives you that extra round of value, but also because I think generally it looks like next year's draft is going to be deeper. So you're going to get across the board a deeper group of players to choose from.
And on that point, MPs, and again, not to give people a spoiler alert from a year from now, but you're already working on the 2025 draft guide. Do you feel that type of strategy of trading away picks for next year sort of impacts? I know everyone's like, oh, we want to win now. No, that's great. But what position next year is deep that you sort of go, look, if we don't dip our toe this year, it is because the value is all next year. We're going to trade our picks and go heavy on that. I know that's... Or maybe that's a nonsense notion, but do you see anything like that happening? Does it impact it that deep?
So I think the Packers are fortunate, right? In the barring one or two positions, they're pretty set at most positions, potentially for a number of years because they're so young. So I think that again gives them flexibility. Hopefully, you know, next year in terms of being able to pick the best player available or close to the best player available when they pick, regardless of position, right? We're not the quarterback class next year right now doesn't appear to be as good as this year's, but we don't need a quarterback.
Yeah.
Right. So wide receiver looks pretty good again next year. It's good most years. You know, that might be the year to start dipping back into the wide receiver pool, knowing that all the young guys that we've got now are going to reach free agency at close to the same time.
Yeah.
So I think that's the kind of thing that you think about. I guess the other thing as well, if you get those extra picks next year, it gives you flexibility in next year's draft. So if you did something, and I'm not suggesting they should do this, but if you traded, say, that one of your second round picks this year and got a first round pick next year, or traded out of the first round this year and maybe got a first round pick for doing so next year, there may be a guy near the top of the draft next year that you could package your first round picks up to get if you really like that guy. But I think the flexibility it gives them is great. And I think because they've got so many picks this year, again, you know, the 13 last year, 11 this year, it also gives them the opportunity to do that if they wanted to.
Packers bloody love draft picks, don't they? Absolutely love them. Nom, nom, nom. I mean, they love just collecting them. It's a collector's item. Andy Davies, have we missed anybody on the defensive thing? Are we ready to close the book on this year's defensive draft guide?
No, I think we've captured all the players. I think we're in good position. I think Peter's right, though. I think there'll be some QB-hungry teams out there that, particularly at the top of the second round, they'll be throwing Yeah, plenty of compensation around for teams that are willing to sort of drop out of that top of the second round in particular. So it'll be interesting to see if that competition for picks gets really heated. But no, I think it's I think how successful we are in the draft will go a long way to determining how successful we are next year defensively. Because at the minute we are a number of pieces short, aren't we? So I think it's got to fall right for us. A lot of the drafters that we talk about all these players, and just come down to the draft board falling your way. And I think because there's little room for error, particularly in linebacker and safety, we are going to rely on the board falling our way. So yeah, fingers and toes crossed, and hope for the best, because I don't think the solutions outside of the names we've discussed are there, to be quite frank. So we're going to need that input from first year guys, I think.
Yeah. Which is never a position you want to be in, especially when we've got a change on D coordinator. But it just adds to the excitement of it. Peter, before we close the book on the defensive side of things, and we'll be back again in about 2 days to look at special teams. And it's one of my favourite times, you know, saying all those hypotheticals, right? If this goes a little bit funny, I mean, what are we looking at? What's an off-the-wall pick you want? And I know I want to get you stuck in there. But before we close the defensive thing, any final words or forever hold your peace?
No, the only thing I would say was absolutely concur with what Andy just said. This board leading up to pick 25 could fall any number of ways. There could be four quarterbacks off the board. There could be six off the board before the Packers pick. Who knows how many offensive tackles are going to be gone. And all of that's going to determine whether some of these names that we've mentioned, the DeJeans, the Bartons, other players are there when the Packers pick. So it's going to be a long night of watching and waiting.
Not as long as you may think, though, first night. I would, I think we'd be nuts hanging out here and say the Packers are trading up this year. And that's where I'm coming from.
There's some stuff you just don't want to edit out. You know, you just want to leave the phraseology in. That one's being left in, because if they get to 55 minutes deep, they deserve that phraseology in.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I don't know. All the signs are there for me. I just think the way the way it's stacked, and the way that what we're looking for, and we're back in a window, aren't we? We're back in the championship window, and I think we need to make things happen. And in that kind of scenario, it's in his psyche to trade up, isn't it? I absolutely think so. He'll be looking to make a splash, and that takes two to tango. So we'll need the right people, but I think it'll be the Seahawks.
Yeah.
You heard it here.
There you go. There's Andy with his nuts out. So if you want to see it. And I'm playing that soundbite forevermore. If they do end up trading up and it is the Seahawks, that's going to be the new intro to the podcast. It's just you talking about the balls. Right, yeah. So that is at the IT Hedgehog with an absolutely stupendous 310-page draft guide. It's at Pooley Shrew, the draft guru. They're both guys are fantastic follows on all types of social media as well. And jump on the website, of course, and grab your draft guide. Listen to the podcast. Listen to past podcasts to really see the pedigree that we have. We're very lucky to have you guys, in Packers sphere in general, but certainly on the UK side of things, it's just an embarrassment to riches. And for what it's worth, I'm at Steedy the NFL. I mean, you can give me a follow, but definitely I'll do it for the draft stuff because I'm not there for it. So look, that's the podcast. That's offense in the books, lads. That's defense in the books. And we'll be back in a couple of days to look at special teams and wonky picks and trades and predictions. But until then, let's go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.